covering from
everything to cover from?
Our agenda for today, for the next few days, is today we are going to finish Migo. Migo will be gone. And then we slide into Chazara mode. Although tomorrow we'll still be Parsha because the Parsha doesn't wait for us. So we'll still talk about Parsha tomorrow. And Sunday, in terms of the Kiyas, I think what we'll do is we're in the middle of a topic this week, so we'll finish off that topic. And then we'll chazer some of the topics we talked about in the Kiyas. So that'll also get reviewed a little bit, the age, etc. And then in terms of our core Iyun, so we'll start Chazara, let's assume, today. And that should take us at least most of the middle days of next week. And then after that, we'll have oral midterms. And again, I'll meet with the Chavrusas and just see where everybody's holding. I hope it shouldn't be too much of pressure. So in terms of the official scheduling of midterms, is that a problem for anyone? I know originally they were supposed to be, I think, this week, November 5th, November 8th. I don't know how last week's events affected us, but if I expected scheduling in general. Does anyone have a problem with the schedule that I just laid out in terms of your college midterms? I don't think it should really interfere, but if anyone does have an issue, please let me know. I don't know now, I can let me know later, you can let me know in private, but you do have the right to have that addressed, so please let me know if that's an issue for anyone. Okay, so just to close off with a few more points about Migo, again, all of them emerging directly from the discussion around our Tosfos. So first of all, to tie in a point that involves coming back to Migo Lahotzi for a moment. You may recall when we spoke about Migo Lahotzi, so we asked, why would one say that Migo shouldn't work Lahotzi? Assuming, like those Rishonim who say that it doesn't work, why shouldn't it work? Is it an issue that it's simply not strong enough? We noted how the Ksos seems to line up with a view such as that. Or is it an issue of the mechanics of Migo, that Migo doesn't do that? It doesn't move around things, something along those lines. Somehow the procedure of Migo doesn't lend itself to being Motzi Mamon. And we had some discussions along those lines. So there's an interesting Mar Makom, which is I realize it might be more interesting when I give it the credit for it. So I didn't actually put this on the list till now, but just take note of it and take a look. The Tshuvas are Ashba. The Ashba and his Tshuvas in Chela Gimel, in Simon Shinmun Gimel, has a Tshuva where he talks about this question of Migo Lahotzi. And on the surface, if you read it quickly, so it sounds like he's saying the first side that we said. But essentially, Migo doesn't have that power. Some type of quantitative assessment of what Migo does, and it's not on the Madrega to be Motzi Mamon. The Rashba, it's a relatively brief discussion. It sounds like that's what he's saying. But, and I had my attention directed to this by a very fine article that was published in a journal, Kovetz Beis Aharon B'Yisrael. It's a journal, a very fine Torah journal, that's published by the Karlin Stolen Mostos, the Karlin Stolen Chassidus, and a journal which is a very popular journal, very well read, not popular in a normal sense, but popular in the sense that it's a Chashuv journal, and people often take notes of the articles that exist in it, and most of them are available on HebrewBooks.org. This one is in number Kufman Gimel in this journal. So there is a very fine article there about the Migo or Migo Lahotzi. And he makes a couple of observations about the Rashba and suggests that the Rashba is saying more than what it seems on the surface. And maybe he can give us some significant insights about all of these topics together. That the Rashba starts off his discussion by saying, he quotes the Shoel, the questioner, who asked him, why should Migo not work Lahotzi? Since Migo is Doraisa, why shouldn't it work? And then the Rashba responds,
And he says that he personally might think that actually Migo does work Lahotzi. Remember, there's a whole camp of Rishonim who do say that. But he says, thinking about it in Svara, there is a Svara to say that it shouldn't work Lahotzi, but that's not what Migo does. So the author of this article, his name is Rav Avraham Yeshaya Walpa. So he notes a few things. So first of all, Rashba didn't really explain why it's not what it does. He didn't really answer the question. But also, his opening statement is hard to understand. Just because Migo's Daraisa should work Lahotzi, what's the connection? Aaron's shaking his head. He's saying, Rose Daraisa. Right? There are other things that are Daraisa that don't do that. What is there about Migo being Daraisa that means it should have the magical power to be Motzi Mami? So he suggests something along the following lines. And again, as always, I reserve the right to filter it through my own understanding, look it up and see if he says exactly this or not. But I think I'm entitled to do that a little bit. He says something along the following lines. What does the Rashba mean when he says it's Daraisa? What's the impact of that statement? And so other things are Daraisa, they're not Motzi Mamon. So why should this be Motzi Mamon just because it's Daraisa? So it sounds like what the Rashba is getting at is that in the case of Amigo, you have an alternative Taina, and that Taina would have worked to be Motzi Mamon. Now you're not using that Taina. But Migo, which gives you access to that Taina, since it's Daraisa, it should be Motzi Mamon. What is he saying? What's he getting at? So it sounds like what he's getting at is he's saying the effect of Migo being Daraisa is that it means that that other Taina is fully in effect. If Migo was only Darabanan, maybe there's some limitation. Maybe we wouldn't go all the way with it. But since Migo's Daraisa, seems to be what the Rashba is saying, so therefore, what's missing from the original Taina? So what's implicit in the words of the Rashba is that what Migo means is that the Taina that you're not using, it's as if you are using it. That Migo gives you the ability to invoke that first Taina as if you actually are putting it forward. So that alternative Taina, which would have worked to be Motzi Mamon, let's say, theoretically, it's considered for you as if the claim is there. That seems to be what the Rashba is getting at by emphasizing that it's Daraisa. That claim is in its full power. So if that's the case, if that claim is fully effective for you, so then it's a fair question. So then why isn't it effective Lahotzi Mamon? So then when the Rashba goes on to say, well, it doesn't make sense that it would apply in that context, perhaps what he's saying is as follows. When does Migo come into the discussion? This Chiddush HaTorah, that Migo exists, so you're allowed to invoke the power of a Taina that's not actually being used, but it's Ki'ilu it was used. In what context does such a power exist? Presumably, this is a tool that we give someone who's under attack. If somebody is trying to be Motzi Mamon from him, so we give you certain tools that allow you to defend yourself. Part of the presumption of a mukhsah. So, for example, he doesn't mention this example, but it seems to me it's somewhat comparable to Kimli. Are you familiar with the principle of Kimli? That if there's a din Torah between two people, and I want to be Motzi Mamon from you, you can defend yourself by invoking a minority shita. But if there's a shita lahalacha, which is not the dominant shita, but it favors the mochzak, so the mochzak is allowed to invoke that shita. There's a whole set of rules about Kimli, what qualifies the shita, how many shitas you need. without getting into it, but the point is that there's a broader array of tools that are available to somebody who's defending himself as a muhsin. So it sounds like what he's saying is that among the tools for the muhsin is he should be able to say that the claim that I could have used that I'm not using, it's as if it's an effect. But by its very nature, that's not a power that we're going to give to a motzi mamon. That's a power that we're going to give to the defender. You follow that, Svara? It's a very interesting idea. So what he's essentially saying is that migo is daraisa. That comes to tell us that when a migo is relevant, you have the full power of the alternative taina. It's not limited at all by being with Rabbanan or something of that sort. But you have to figure out when migo applies. So migo is a tool that we would give to the defender, not to an attacker, not to a motzi mamon. So essentially, in our original chakira, see, the Rashba just switched teams. We had said before that it sounded on the surface, without reading it carefully, that the Rashba is saying it doesn't have enough power to motzi mamon. It was a quantitative thing. But now, with this explanation, it's really saying the opposite. That actually, migo has a lot of power. It just doesn't have the power. It's not that it doesn't have the power to be motzi mamon, it's that it doesn't come up in the context of being motzi mamon. It's not given to a motzi mamon. And therefore, he goes to say a linguistic chiddush. Says that when we say migo lahotzi lo amrina, when Rishonim use such a term, what they really mean is that it doesn't exist lahotzi. Not that migo is weak against a mochza. Not that migo is ineffective lahotzi mamon. Lo amrina, the whole thing doesn't exist. The concept migo doesn't apply in such a context. Which would be different than saying, say, rov against the chazaka. So we say, ein holchin b'mamon achar harov. But not the rov lo amrina. We don't say the rov doesn't exist. The rov is there. But migo lohotzi lo amrina, according to those who have such a principle, it means that migo is not even brought into play in such a discussion. Migo simply doesn't exist. It's not meant to accomplish that. Yes, sir.
It doesn't exist in the same side you said before that it's not migo does? Or?
It's working off, it definitely would be in that camp. Yeah, that migo simply isn't brought into the conversation.
What exactly does that mean?
It means that the whole idea of migo, by definition, it's given to a defender. It's given to somebody who is fighting off an attacker. So a motzi mamon, there's no concept of migo.
But the Tzvara that the Rashi gave, or that brings up that if you have the other taina.
Right.
So that would make a difference.
The question is, when do you say that? When we say migo, it means that you have the full power of the alternative taina. But the question is, when do we give you that power?
So
who do we give that power to? We give that power to a defendant.
Midiraisa?
Yeah, Minhatora, right, exactly. Minhatora, the defender has the power to get the full credit of the alternative taina that he's not using. So the question is, who gets that power? So migo is a very powerful gun. It's loaded with very powerful bullets. The only question is, who has the gun? So we say migo lo amrina, it doesn't mean that migo is not a gun that's strong enough to fight off a chazaka. It means that we simply don't give the motzi that gun. Now, in terms of the technicalities of what's considered a chazaka, what's considered a defender for that purpose, you can look at the article if you want. It goes into an extensive discussion that we may not necessarily be talking about an absolute chazaka. We may have a broader definition. I'm not going to focus on that so much. But I think it's a very interesting interpretation. And then he goes on to say that the view in Rishonim that we discussed yesterday, I mentioned the Rimi Gash, that the Rimi Gash maintains that migo never works to get you out of a shul. If you got a chance to see this morning that the Rush quoted it and the Ram quoted it. So that's the view of the Rimi Gash and the Rambam. So the Rambam in Hilchos Torin V'Nitin and Perek Beis Halacha Dalet, that's his view as well. It's interesting, I mentioned Kimley a few minutes ago. So the Rambam's father was a Talmud of the Rimi Gash.
So it's not a coincidence that there are shitas that go from the Rimagash to the Rambam. And in fact, there is discussion, Hilchos Kinui, whether the Rimagash and Rambam are considered to be two different opinions or not.
Okay,
there you go. So that's 2 days. So the question whether Rimagash and Rambam are considered to be 2 days, so that is a point for Hilchos Kinui. So here's an example of that. But you see, they both hold the shita that Eagle after Yeshua lo amrin. So
can you say Kimli for the ones who say that there are two opinions?
Right, that's also a question. How far are you going to go with it? Right? So we have to get up to Kimli someday. You don't have to talk about all the chakiris you can ask in Kimli. But essentially, their position is that Eagle doesn't work to get you out of the shua. That's what the Ran quotes and the Rush quotes we discussed yesterday. So this Mechaber explains in the same way. That again, the tool is given to somebody who is defending off somebody trying to be motzi mamon from it. But why should it work to get you out of the shul? Simply not one of the contexts in which Migo is invoked. When Migo is invoked, it's very powerful, but it's just simply not relevant in every context. And the Rambam and the Rimagash are telling you that they think a shvuah is not one of the contexts in which it comes up. He then goes on to address something else that we talked about yesterday, which is also, again, kind of a helpful way just to look at this whole sugya, or a helpful point. So the machlokas of whether we say migo lahotzi or not. And we saw that at the end of the day, that's a machlokas rishonim. Many rishonim invoke the answer in our Tosfos to say we don't say migo lahotzi, and many other rishonim don't use an answer. And probably believe, or explicitly sometimes believe, that Migo Lahotzi we do say. And we saw it was 2 days in the Ramah, and the Shach said it was a Safek. So he had pointed out in this article in the Beis Aharon Yisrael that it's just hard to swallow that there's such a spectrum, there's such a range. Because look how it comes out. It comes out that on the one hand, if you say Migo Lahotzi Lo Amrina, right, so then what are you saying? You're saying that Migo is say, comparable to a rove, and that a rove is actually more powerful than a Migo, let's say according to the Trumas Adeshin, for example. Right? Remember we mentioned that the Trumas Adeshin says that Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, if one of them has a rove, so that person will win. So the rove can work in that context to outdo Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, Yechloku. Right? You may recall it's a good segue right into our Chazar, just to take us right into the first daf again. But that the Trumas Adeshin said that a rove works because it's not a real Chazaka. The Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, they're not really Muchazakin, and therefore if one of them has a rove, he'll win. So then the Trumas Adeshin goes on to say, aye, but what about Tosfos, who seems to agree with that we don't say Migo in that context because it's Migo Lahotzi? So yeah, for that purpose, we don't say Migo. It's a strong enough of a chazaka to fight off the Migo. So it comes out, according to that Shemus Adashim, that Rove is significantly stronger than Migo, or Migo is sufficiently weaker than Rove. However, that's one side of the equation. What about the Ramban and all those Rishonim who say that Migo the Hotzi Amrina? So since we know that you can't be mostly with a Rove, so those who show him apparently think Migo is stronger than a rove. So do we really have such a broad spectrum that you have some Rishonim who say that Migo is stronger than a rove, and some Rishonim who say that Migo is much weaker than a rove? It's all such a broad pendulum that goes from one end to the other, complete opposites, and a katze la katze. It's a little hard to believe. So he suggests that, no, the whole point is the way he says it. It's the first part of the Rashba. Now, what does Migo mean? Migo means you have the full taina that you're not using. The taina that you're not using is fully there. And the machlokes among the Rishonim, whether or not we say Migo lahotzi amrina, is, are we using Migo at all? When Migo is used, we agree. It has the full power of whatever that taina is. And the machlokes is only whether or not it's invoked in the first place. So therefore, it's not really this mathematical point in terms of whether Migo is more than Rove or Rove is more than Migo.
In fact, when Migo is invoked, it works fully, so it could be out of Rove too. But the question is, maybe it shouldn't be invoked in certain contexts, and that's the view that the Rishonim who use it to answer Artosis is basically saying. So you shouldn't be so surprised that it allows you to swim from one extreme to the other. It's all just a question of whether it's even coming into the discussion in the first place. But when it's there, it has the full power of whatever Taina is invoked. I think it's a very interesting perspective, and it addresses a lot of the various points that we've spoken about so far. Now, also a little bit synergy and to be timely. So this morning, I got a call from the REITs office because I'm involved with publishing Svarim here for the REITs imprint. And they received this big package. They didn't know where it came from. So they asked me if I knew where it came from in the context of REITs Press. So it took a while to figure it out. It took a moment to figure it out. It wasn't something that we made here, but it was something that was made in Eretz Yisrael, apparently with a previous agreement with the yeshiva. That Machon Yerushalayim was publishing the writings of Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan Tzvekli. So, of course, as mentioned, Ezra Schechter likes to say in the quotes of Chanan, and a word from our sponsor. So, we have a fondness for Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan here in Yeshiva Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan. So, Machon Yerushalayim is publishing the Svarim together with our yeshiva. So, this is an old arrangement from before I was involved, so it didn't have anything to do with it, but the Svarim apparently were continuing to be published, so a bunch of them were delivered this morning. So included in the Svarim, in the Sefer that was delivered this morning, is the Nachal Yitzchak. The Nachal Yitzchak is a Vitzchak Chanan on Choshen Mishpat, including his extensive discussions of Kali Migo. Many, many Svarim are known for giving a lot of attention to Migo, so among them is the Nachal Yitzchak over Vitzchak Chanan. So I couldn't pass up the opportunity to look before coming to see if he addresses this. So he has a lot, of course, to say about Migo, but it's interesting in terms of this point that we just made. And so Rove versus Migo, are they the same? Are they different? What's more? What's less? So the point we're making now is that it's a little bit questionable how much you can take a mathematical attitude to it. You say, well, plug in the equation, Rove works, Migo doesn't work, therefore Rove is better than Migo, plug in that equation, Migo works, Rove doesn't, therefore Migo is better. You could take a mathematical attitude, or you could say that essentially it depends on how it functions, and therefore there might be reasons why it'll work here, why it won't work there. So Rabbi Yitzchak Chanan has a discussion about this with Nachal Yitzchak, and he works, first of all, to figure it out, essentially, is a rove, is Migo like a rove, is it more than a rove or not? And he does essentially work off the premise that those Rishonim who say Migo lahotz de lo amrina are essentially equating it to a rove. And just like we can't be motzi mamon with a rove, so too we can't be motzi mamon with a migo. But based on that, he wants to explain what we discussed just now and yesterday, that the view in Rishonim, the Rambam and the Rimigash, that you can't be motzi, that the migo won't get you out of a shvur. So he says, why is that true? Why is it the case that Migo is not going to be effective to undo a Shua? Because we compare it to a rove. So what is a rove? A rove is essentially a birur. It's essentially a way of trying to clarify the facts, which usually is invoked if we can't clarify the facts without it. And it's generally going to be a premise that if I can be mavar of the situation, if I have the ability to clarify what's true, so then I won't rely on rove. So if we look at a shvua as a way of figuring out whether the person is telling the truth or not, then once we throw a shvua on him, he's going to have to come clean. And we'll clarify whether he's telling us the truth. So if that's how a rove would tell us that we should be mavara things, so too, migo, we prefer to be mavara rather than use the migo. So if the shvua is a way to take things a little bit further, so then it doesn't make sense to say that the migo will excuse us from the shvua. Follow that point? But essentially, working off this mathematical rove equals migo equation, if rove means you're going to try to be mavara further if you can, so migo means that too, and essentially that's what a shvua is there to accomplish. So it wouldn't make sense to say
we should let you off the hook for the Shvuah because of the Megillah. A word from my response.
Okay.
So, yes.
Back to Ravalpa.
Mm-hmm. Back to who?
Did you say that the article is in the...
Oh, Ravalpa. Yeah.
Oh, it's Ravalpa.
That's okay. That works too.
No.
Anyways, back works for some purposes. Yeah.
That article.
Yes.
I understand what it says. I'm not sure I totally get how the Rashba is a springboard.
So he has two points that he's making in the Rashba. The Rashba, if you look at it superficially, he's essentially saying the first way you thought, the quantitative point, that it doesn't have the power to do this. But if you look at it more carefully, he focuses on two parts of the equation, and they can be separated. And that's why this is my focus on Miguel Hotzi, because he works off the assumption that there are two separate views. So the first view is that, why do we care that Migo is derisive? And the Rashba says, oh, since Migo is Daraisa, why shouldn't it work to be Motzi? Since when does something being Daraisa make it effective in that way? There are principles that don't work that way, like Rogue is
Daraisa. Oh, so he's not reading it into what the Rashba
is
saying.
He is. He's saying, what's the Rashba telling us? And the Rashba says, what question is the Rashba answering? Or the Shoal in the Rashba is he answering when he says, oh, it's Daraisa, so it should work? What's he addressing by invoking its Daraisa-ness? Because deraisas don't mean the significance of something being deraisa doesn't mean that you can be motzi min hamotzi. There are things that are deraisa that don't have that power. What's he telling us by focusing on it being deraisa? So it sounds like the question is like this: that, well, maybe Migo doesn't work because it's a watered down version. It's a drabban, and that it's a version of something that is limited in its power. So he answers that, no, it's deraisa, it's a full power. So it sounds like what he's emphasizing by the deraisa is saying that Migo is a version of something, and don't think that it's a limited version, it's the full-powered version. Don't think it's the beta or the whatever, the trial mode version where you only get some of the powers. It's the full-powered version. So what you can see from that is that Migo means that the other taina, it's not that, well, you have a taina, so Migo gives you some points. It's that Migo is that taina. That taina that you could use.
Right,
I think that's how it works. That the taina that you could be using, you are using. You get that credit, you get that power. It's invoked on your behalf. And it's invoked in full power, so therefore don't tell me, well, you're using that taina, but it's only a drabbanan, so it doesn't work a hotzi.
But it all starts with that.
Yes, it all starts with that question. Right, the emphasis of it being deraisa. And then separate, so that leads to this whole assumption that that's what Migo means. That Migo means that the alternative taina that you could have used is considered as if it's used. And then the question becomes, okay, so then we can argue, when do you have Migo, when do you not have Migo? Do you have Migo? The Rashba's premise is that it makes sense only to give it to defenders. But maybe some Rishonim disagree. Maybe those Rishonim who say Migo lahotzi amrino say that you could also give it to a motzi. And maybe that's also a discussion of whether it should apply to a shmur or not. Yeah, all our machlokes that about Migo, according to him, is just when does Migo come in? And that's what the language means. Lo amrinan doesn't mean that Migo is not powerful in that context. It means it's not relevant in that context. It's only invoked when it's invoked. And we can argue about when that is. Okay. So now we mentioned that we would just also try to address the other two approaches that we saw in the Rishonim. In terms of our Tosfos about the quarter talus, so we've spoken about three. There were two more. Two more are brief points. We'll just discuss them quickly. So why is it that if you have one person saying the whole talus is mine, and the other person saying the half talus is mine, and the Mishnah says he gets to walk away with a quarter of the talus, so all the Rishonim ask, why don't we say give him the whole half talus that he's asking for? Migo, that he could have said he owes the whole talus, which would have given him half the talus. And we've discussed so far three answers, because that would be called Migo Lahotzi, because that would be called Migo Mimamon Mamon, because that would be called Migo de Ha'aza. A fourth approach you find, and a lot of these approaches you find in all the same Rishonim, because for example, the Ramban, the Ran, others, they go through all of the answers. So you find that the answers are overlapping your shaman. So this is one of the ones that you find many of them addressing. That perhaps, since his original claim
what would he have gotten? Half of what he's asking for. So therefore, now also we do give him that credit for the same deal. He gets half of what he's asking for. So it's not that he's not getting his migo. He does get his migo. His migo essentially means 50%. So now he gets his 50%. So how do you understand that idea? What does that? What does that mean? Why should that be? Does that make sense to you? Why should we prorate? Why don't we just say, like, the premise of these were shown, and that since he would have gotten the half talus, then he got the half talus. Why do we care about the proportion, the percentage of what he is invoking now? So you could say, it's the way Shmuel Rozovsky suggests in his shir, that this shows you that Migo is a koach hatayna, essentially. You get the nemanis, so to speak, of the, you get the power of the taina you could have used. So therefore, it's that exact taina. That exact taina, that exact power, is for you to get half of what you're asking for. So to here, you get half of what you're asking for. Which still is a little counterintuitive, but it does perhaps seem to work off that idea of a koach hatayna type of svar. Alternatively, you could say a little bit more. There is a discussion about this in the Birkas Avraham also that we mentioned yesterday, Birkas Avraham's whole discussion about Nigel Mimama Mamama that we talked about. So he notes the following. Says that essentially, Migo, you want this Migo to give you what you would have gotten had you said the full claim. So what does the full claim give you? Half the talus. What does that mean? It means that you are right, you actually own half the talus? No, it means that we're splitting the talus because you're both fighting over it. So that essentially means that really you have half of every molecule of the talus. It's not that there's a half a talus that's 100% yours and a half that's 100% his. It means that there's a dinya chlokal in the whole talus. So all of the talus is half yours. So you end up, for mathematical purposes and for accounting purposes, we're not going to split up every molecule. We'll just split the whole thing. You walk away with half, and you and the other guy walks away with half. So essentially, that idea that you get half of all of the talus, you're still getting that. It's just that the first half, you're admitting is not yours. So if you say the first half is not mine, it doesn't make sense to give you a half of that first half. So you should only get the half of the remaining half. Well, that is essentially, that is the greater claim. The greater claim is that every part of the talus is half yours. So that's essentially what's happening. You're getting half of the talus that you're dealing with. So he suggests it's really an extension of Migo Mimama Mamama. That essentially the other half of the talus we're not dealing with because the remote is not yours. So we're only dealing with 50% of the talus. So the whole nature of your claim is that I own half of every part of this object. So therefore, you get a quarter of what you're dealing with. You get a quarter of the whole thing, which is half of what you're dealing with. Aaron?
And this is similar to certain example by the Shtar Zerifa, that the Rashbam says it's Migo Malkum Edim since he was moved to something.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I don't understand this whole approach is that Migo is that he would not have been moved and therefore would have been... Why does this whole that change the Migo?
See, that right now, factually, if he has said, I don't have any part in this half, so, we're not going to give him any part of that first half. I think, do we have a chocolate? Do we have to draw the talus? To never have a magic markers. Right, so normally, does this work? Okay, this doesn't work either. All right, so normally, this represents a whole talus. Beautiful whole talus. So, normally, they'll split it, one will get this, one will get this in. So here, when he says that I should get the demonis of my tana on the whole thing, he gets that, because that means that every part of the talus is shared by both of us. So essentially, I could have meant, all right, fine, so now let's give him half a talus. Let's split this whole talus. But practically, why are we going to do that? If he admits that this half is not his, so we have to take it off the table. Because why should we practically give him something that he's acknowledging is not at all his? So we will credit his alternative taina, that every part of the talus is half his, but we'll have to take this part off the table, because why should we practically give him something that he acknowledges isn't his? So he says, essentially, it's of a piece with me going on with mom, that this is taken off the table. So this is in the Berakhos Sofer, that this is essentially taken off the table. So therefore, he gets a half of what's left, which ends up to be a quarter. And yes, that does parallel his original taina, which would have given him a half. So in a sense, his ego is there. So that's perhaps two different perspectives on this fourth teretz. And then we will just very briefly mention the fifth approach, that the Rabbeinu Peretz quotes from the Sar Mikutzi, and he refers to a Gemara in Yevamos, make this point, which I put on today's Maimonides, that Kufi Dalet, that the reason we don't want to say Nigo in this context is because when a person is saying that he has half the talus, so what is his claim? How did he get half the talus? His claim must be that he thinks he picked it up the same time as the other guy picked it up. And therefore he has half the talus. So if that's his claim, if it's not true, why is it not true? Presumably because he's wrong, not because he's lying. That's what we're concerned about. We're not concerned about Shaker here. We're concerned about him being factually incorrect. So therefore, the namanas that comes from, or the credibility, I'll use the English term again, not to be confusing, the credibility that will come from his ego is not relevant, because we don't think that he's lying, we just think he might be wrong. And the reference to the Gemara Yevamos and Kofi Dalet, so there the Mishnah talks about the woman who claims that her husband died, and whether or not she should believe that she's no longer married, that she's not an Eguna, but that her husband is actually deceased. So if she says he died in his bed, she's believed. If she says he died at war, in that statement she's not believed. So what's the difference? Is she telling the truth or not? So apparently, as the Gemara makes clear, it's not that we think she's lying. If she's lying, she can be lying in both cases. But it's that when she says he died in bed, so she knows if he died in bed or not. So then that's a question of whether she's telling the truth or not. But when she claims he died in war, so she wasn't there. So it makes sense that she's saying that, well, so many people died in war, and he didn't come back. It doesn't make sense to say that he survived and all those other people who didn't come back died in war. So it could be she's essentially guessing, she's essentially evaluating the situation, so she could be wrong. And we talked about this when we first laid out the possibilities, emphasized in terms of Hilchos Lashon Hara and Hilchos a lot of things, that it's important to understand that people have the possibility of being wrong, even if they're honest people who tell the truth. So when we believe something that an honest person says, that's very often indicated, but sometimes we have to also be aware of the possibility that people are simply incorrect. So it's also, just as we talk about Migo, we have the expression, malu malo l'shaker, well, I'll believe someone, because what reason does he have to lie? So sometimes that's effective, if we're saying that he's talking about his own position about something. So since he knows the facts, so if he's wrong, if he's saying something false, it's because he's lying. So then we can invoke malo l'shaker, why would he lie? But sometimes people say things that are incorrect, and they have no motive for lying. They're not lying, they're just wrong. And that comes up all the time in Hilchos Lashon Hara and the like, so it's important just to be aware of when dealing with people that not everything you hear is true, even when honest people say it. So to hear, that's what these Rishonim seem to be saying, and that's what the Gemara Yevamos seems to be saying, that even if the person is not lying, but we're wondering maybe they made a mistake. And that could be relevant here as well. So if that's the case, if that's the way it works,
So how does this fit into our initial question about Migo? Is Migo about credibility? Is Migo about Koach HaTaina? How does this answer fit in? What do you think? It seems, I think you're right. So I think it's more the opposite. Right? If it's Koach HaTaina, then maybe we should still give it to him. Right? Then maybe it means, okay, you have no idea what the truth is, but we sometimes count up points in your favor anyway. Like we discussed, we talked about, for example, Machlof Parah V'Chamor. Sometimes you'll have a monetary dispute, and neither party knows that they're right. They just say they think they'd like to be the one who wins, and their things will count in your favor. So maybe this should be the case here as well. Okay, he doesn't know if he actually picked up the same time. He thinks maybe he did, maybe he didn't. He'd like to put in his claim because he wants to get what he can get, legitimately. And let's credit him with the fact that he could have used a strategy that would have gotten him the half tiles. If it's Koach HaTaina, that seems to make sense. So Roni is presumably correct that this view in the Rishonim seems to see Migo not as Koach HaTaina, but it's all about believability. And therefore, the point is made that, okay, your believability is irrelevant. Because we don't think you're lying, we think you're wrong, or you could be wrong. And therefore, the fact that you have no motive to lie is not going to undo that. It's not going to make you correct. Okay, so Adkan Migo. We'll accept for where it comes up in other discussions, but that is our Migo, as we discussed before. So we'll, after the Chazar, we'll talk about Modem Mixus, but that's the anti-Migo. So that's not, Modem Mixus is the opposite of Migo, so that's not going to count as completely as continuing Migo. So let's just quickly review what we spoke about today, and then we'll talk about, we probably won't actually get into too much Chazar at the beginning, we'll just lay out a little bit our Chazar plans, and we'll pick them up after Chumash and Bikidus. So first of all, what we talk about today, so we made a few points. First of all, we discussed the Chubas HaRashba, who was talking about Migo Lahotzi. And it sounds like on the surface, if you read the Rashba quickly, and again, I encourage you to look at it when you get a chance, that the Rashba is simply saying it's a power issue, that Migo was not strong enough to beat a Chazak. But there are a couple of interesting points about the Rashba. One is that he doesn't really explain why it shouldn't work through Motzi Mama. And his opening statement that, quoting from the Shoal, that it's since Migo is Daraisa, it should work with Hotzi. Who cares if it's Daraisa? Other things are Daraisa and they're not Lahotzi. So we discussed the perspective that was suggested in this article in the journal Kovetz of Yisrael Yisrael, that the Rashba is telling you that Migo means that the Taina you could have used, it's as if you used it. It's given to you in its full power. And the emphasis of saying the Raisa is that it's there 100%. It's not a watered-down Rabbanan version. And that's significant because it means that not Migo, you could have said that, so we'll give you some points. Migo means you could have said that, so you have that. That is actually acting in your favor. So then the question just is, who has that power? Who has this gun? Migo has very strong bullets. The gun has very strong bullets. The question is just who has the gun? So the Rashba is saying it doesn't make sense that a Motzi Mamon should have it. It makes more sense that the other person should have it. That essentially it's about a defender having various tools. It's a kula of the Torah given to somebody who is the default victor. The defender usually has the default, gets the tie. So therefore, that's essentially the case here. That's essentially what happens, what Migo is meant to accomplish. So therefore, based on that, he goes on to explain a few more points. So the view of the Rambam and the Rimigash, that Migo doesn't work to get you out of the Shvua, which other Rishonim, as we saw yesterday, were more qualified about, but this view that it never works to get you out of the Shvua. So that could be explained, that Migo is a tool given to a defender of his property. There's no reason to give it to somebody who doesn't want to make a shvua. There's no context for Migo there. And he essentially explains that Migo blank lo amrinon, whenever you have such a phrase, it means that Migo is not relevant. Not that it's ineffective, but that Migo is only invoked in certain contexts, and we can figure out when that context is and when it isn't. So he also addressed the fact that it's surprising there's such a broad range. Is Migo better than Rove or worse than Rove? Because according to the Trumas Hadeshen and others, so Rove would work against Shnei Mochsen Batalis, but Migo doesn't. based on our Tosfos. So it sounds like Rov is stronger than Migo. But according to those Rishonim, then Migo works Mahotzi, and Rov is not Mahotzi, so Migo is stronger than Rov. So there's such a broad view, such a broad range of opinions. Is that really the case? So he explains that no, it's not that there are such opposites. It's just the machlokas is, when do we invoke Migo? And whenever we invoke it, it has whatever power it has. It has the full power to do whatever it does. It's only a question whether it comes in the conversation. So those who say Migo Lahotzi believe you can bring Migo to this discussion and then it has its full power. And those who say Migo Lahotzi Lom Rinan, they're just saying that Migo is not entering into the conversation in that context. And we highlighted the fact that, so if you want to compare Migo and Rove or things like that, or Bar Vashem or whatever it is, you could take a mathematical approach and take equations and see, okay, this is effective here, this speaks that, therefore Rove equals Mamon, Rove equals Migo, Migo is better, etc. You could figure it out any way like that. Or you could say, let's look at how it operates. And we mentioned that Rav Yochanan in the Nachal Yitzchak seems to see it more mathematically, that it sounds that Migo is essentially equivalent to Rove, according to those who say you can't be Motzi with it. And therefore he explains why it is that, again, the view of the Rambam and the Rimigash, that Migo won't pakter from a Shvuah, because we compare it to a Rove. A Rove is something we rely on unless we can clarify things further, and then we do clarify further. So too, Migo will rely on unless we can clarify further. And the Shvuah is a way of clarifying things further, so it doesn't make sense to say that Migo should get you off. And then we discuss these other two approaches within the answer in Tosfos, the answer to Tosfos' question. The idea that a lot of the Rishonim quote, someone pointed out that Tosefta sounds like this, by the way, that since in your superior claim you get half of what you're asking for, so to here you get half. And it's a little bit difficult to understand, because why should we prorate it? Why don't we say he gets the half talus, here too he gets the half talus. So we mentioned two approaches. One was Shmuel Rozovsky, who said that it shows you it's a koach ha-taina idea. So you get proportionate, you get essentially the same structure you would have gotten with a better taina. And we mentioned a slightly more question about that.
Can you just explain that a little more?
Yeah, that essentially, what does Migo mean? It means that the same power you have from the superior taina, you have it here. So since the superior taina, it doesn't fully explain it.
It's not about koach. That just happens to be the end with that claim of Kula Shali that you could have made.
What does it do for you? It gets you
head. It gets you head. That's right. The Totsah. It's not about the Koach.
Correct, except that that's what the Totsah comes from. It comes from the Koach. I agree, it's a little bit less intuitive, which is why.
This isn't sure.
Sure, Shmorzowski, yeah. Mm-hmm. See it. So, that's what. But the point is, if it's about credibility, so then we shouldn't care at all that, oh, I give you this because I could have said something better. So then that really should work. So the idea that it should be proportionate, if you had to choose between these two, it works better for the Koach HaTayin. Then we mentioned the Berkas Avraham, who says it in a little bit more of an involved way, that essentially you are getting your superior taina. The superior taina, what does it mean? It doesn't mean you're entitled to half a talus. It means you're entitled to half of every part of this talus. So that's still what's happening. You're getting half of every part of the talus. The only problem is that half of it you've signed away by saying you don't have that half. So you are throwing that part away, so it doesn't make sense to give that to you. So if that's the case, so then you are essentially getting what you're asking for, which is a half of the remaining part of the talus, and essentially a quarter. And then we mentioned, just this last view, I guess the simplest view, that we don't say Migo because it's not about believing you, because we don't think you're lying. I think two people both say the talus is mine, so then you could have all kinds of scenarios with the line. If this person is saying, I think it's half mine, so there's a limited range of possibilities. What does it mean it's half mine? It's half mine because I think I picked it up at the exact same time he did. So the reason we might not give it to him is because, not that we think he's lying, but we think he's wrong. What are the chances that it's the exact same second? So therefore, if it's a question of him being wrong, it doesn't help that we could say, my little shocker. It doesn't help that we could say that he has credibility, but he could still be essentially wrong. And we pointed out that, again, that doesn't seem to work if you're coming from a Koach HaTaina perspective. From a Koach HaTaina perspective, it makes sense. Let's give you all the points you can get, even though you don't know if you're right or not. But if it's about credibility, so then credibility is only relevant if you think you are, if you have the ability to know if you're right or wrong, and it's just a question if you're lying. And then we emphasize why, in general, in Hilchos Lashon Hara and the like, it's important to be aware of the fact that people can tell you things all the time, that they're honest people who have no reason to lie, but they can simply be wrong. And when we talk about Mavel Shaker here, we primarily mean in a context when somebody's representing his own position, so then he presumably knows what's up and what's down. So if he's wrong, it would be because he's lying, and then we could ask, so Mavel Shaker, what motive would he have to lie? Okay, so that's essentially me. Any questions on the Amigo? Look like you're raising your hand. Okay, any questions on the Amigo? Okay, so since we're almost out of time, instead of starting the Chazara, let's just list what's on the agenda for the Chazara, so we know essentially what we spoke about. And then we'll start it on Monday. So essentially, correct me if I'm leaving out anything. So we get a general introduction to Dini Mamonis, both a Hashkafic and Halachic introduction. And then we went from there into the question of the Mishnah and its primary system of Yachloku. And we discussed how there are many different structures that we use to settle the dispute between people, which are essentially Yachloku, Kol Da'olam Gvar, Yehei Munachat Shuyavo Liyahu, Shud Dedaini, Yachloku without a Shu, if you consider those to be two, and Hamotzi Mechaver Lavaraya. And we discussed first why you would say one over the other, and then we also then got into the smaller discussions of each one, talking about some of the pratim of Yachloku and about the question of what Yachloku represents and whether Yachloku is a pshara or an actual psak, and what does it say about the status of each party here. And then we talked about Kol Da'olam and Dvar, the details of that at some length, and we talked about Shud V'Dayini, at least for one day, all the different aspects of what Shud V'Dayini is. And then a little bit about Yehei Murach, which was a little bit of a shorter topic, and discussed that as well. That was most of what we did before Yontif. We came back after Yontif. We talked about the X factor in a lot of these discussions, Drar D'Mamona, and understanding how exactly Drar D'Mamona fits in, the different views about what it is, and how it plays a role in determining all of these aspects. And then we got into Migo, and we talked about the general question of what Migo is, and about the specific forms of Migo that are brought into the conversation because of the question of the Rishonim on Daf Beis Amud Aleph here, essentially Migo Lahotzi, Migo Mion Lamamon, Migo de Ha'aza, and the two other answers that we spoke about today. I think those are most of the subjects that we talked about within the first parak. Does that sound mostly accurate? Okay, so we'll try to, as quickly as possible, over the course of next week, review those key topics. And again, in terms of the second parak, so we talked about some topics of Yeish and various themes of Yeish, a little bit about Siman and more about Yeish in general, about some questions of Suffolk Mammon and what the presumptions are in Suffolk Mammon, about some other broad issues in the second parak. So what we'll do again on Sunday is we will continue the topic we were talking about this past Sunday about Sheker and Shalom and Heterim to lie, and then we'll chazer some of those extra topics. And tomorrow, again, the parasha doesn't wait for us, so tomorrow we'll talk about Chayisar. Everyone should have a wonderful day, should stay safe and stay warm, and it should be only good things.